You're listening to the Screening in Kingston podcast. For more on Screening in Kingston, more episodes, info about our movie clubs, and a lot more fun movie content, visit screeninginkingston.com. It feels like we're back to normal, Taylor. That's what it feels like. The Oscars are done. It's kind of a big milestone. It's almost like we start a new season.
It does feel a clean slate, I guess you could say. Yeah, it's like you're running to the Oscars in a sense. And now we can just decompress and it's the no man's land until summer movies.
Yeah, very much so. It's interesting because especially this year with so many movies being pushed back, there's a few interesting releases through March and April, but a lot less than like normal. So even the few movies you would get that might be interesting, we're not going to get.
What are some interesting releases? I honestly don't know. I always talk about this. I don't have cable, so I'm so out of the loop in terms of trailers, unless movies are heavily promoting on the internet. Mm-hmm. I typically don't know what is in the big screens.
Well, why don't I run down a couple that I'm interested in and you can tell me what you think and I'll sort of describe them and you can tell me if you think they're interesting enough.
Yes, this is your version of Trailers for Taylor, I guess.
Exactly, yeah. Trailers for Taylor. Yes, that's true. That would be a great one. That's a great set. Yeah, okay.
We just have people write in their synopses of movies based on trailers they saw, and I say yes or no.
Okay, so here we go. First official edition of Trailers for Taylor. So I'm really interested in the horror, thriller, mystery, Imaginary. So this is about an imaginary friend that a kid has, their teddy bear is sort of alive, but they have an imaginary friend and it's like, oh, the imaginary friend just went into the teddy bear and the teddy bear ends up being possessed.
Right. And the parents are like, isn't that cute? And it's like,
exactly.
No, it's real.
Oh, adorable. Yeah, no, it's going to murder you. Yeah. So that's coming out later, I believe in a week or so. And that's kind of our first new big horror release of the year. And it's just called Imaginary.
That sounds riveting. And I'm going to counter with I'm already hijacking this segment. And I'm going to give you a trailer for Mike. Only because you mentioned this horror movie. And it's not typical horror movie season. And before I forget... Yeah. I want to mention this movie, Late Night with the Devil. Have you heard about this? It's coming out it'll be out by the time this episode airs, March 22nd. And I don't know if it's getting a wide release, but it's like an indie, it's a smaller movie. And the premise is that it's set in the 1970s and it's a late night show on Halloween night. And the guest is a psychologist or a counselor and a girl who has escaped a satanic cult. Mm. And the late night episode becomes like hijacked by like a possession, like in real time. So late night with the Devil is being billed as a horror comedy and it's coming out in March. So that you're looking forward to Imaginary, which sounds great, by the way. Good, great premise. Is it going to be like no name actors or are we going to have like actual, that was rude of me. I told Dan this week, I was not going to be controversial. I am not going to be unhinged and off the rails today. So I'm already self-editing on air. But what I meant to say is a lot of times with horror movies, it's actors who maybe act in the horror genre,
sure,
but aren't like your typical A-listers.
You're working actors who aren't necessarily an A or B list, but they're like the working actors. Maybe you recognize them in a few things. Yep.
Yep.
And you know, frankly, a horror movie, to me at least, a horror movie has a chance of being slightly better if it is filled with just working actors.
Agreed.
And so, I don't recognize a single person
That's good.
Who's in this. So that also makes it kind of, yes, good. So that's slated to come out. I think that's a pretty good one for later in March. A lot of the April movies I was looking forward to have moved. So there's only two other movies on my list here that I've not moved, that haven't been pushed back, and that I'm kind of interested in. So the next one is, again, in the horror genre, Immaculate.
Oh, with Miss Sweeney.
Sydney Sweeney, back again. Her next role, Immaculate. Another horror movie about Sydney Sweeney plays a nun who basically embarks on some sort of, she's going on some sort of retreat or journey, whatever, and then suddenly, of course, a living nightmare basically happens to her. And how it's sort of being billed is it's sinister secrets and unspeakable horrors begin to happen to her. So it looks like it's a really isolating movie. Like, you're going to get a lot of, like, just one actor dealing with horrors and dealing with things, which I really like horror movies that do that too, when they really isolate you, like The Nun, like movies like The Witch.
Stripped down cast, yes, one location. So, yeah.
Like, Sydney Sweeney is definitely the most famous person in this movie. Like, everyone else seems like it's sure. working actors. And again, she's not even that famous. She's just had a good run recently. But I'm looking forward to that one as well. Like, it's kind of, to me, there's like, okay, there's two interesting horror movies to kind of, out of their normal space, but hey, I'm kind of up for it.
Mike, is this the movie where she gets pregnant? Or is that a different horror movie?
No, I don't actually know if how much that's a part of it. Like, if she gets pregnant and doesn't know and what's going on, because it doesn't say, and from the trailer I watched, that wasn't a part of it, but I wouldn't be surprised if that is exactly what happens.
I think I saw promotional materials about a nun who gets pregnant. Spoiler, nuns are supposed to have a vow of chastity. So her being pregnant is, is a surprise. And immaculate, like the Immaculate Conception of Mary, mm-hmm. Jesus mm-hmm. was immaculately conceived. But so I don't know if the promo material I saw is for this movie, or another one. Or also they could also be about nuns getting pregnant, because every once in a while there's a year where two movies which seem almost identical get released at the same time once in a while, and that hasn't happened in a while. So
from everything I've read, that's not part of it, but with the title, I wouldn't be surprised. Right. Like, I wouldn't be surprised if maybe like they're kind of hinting at it, but just have that hasn't been in promotion.
The reveal
I've seen, or that's the reveal, because all I know is she goes on some sort of retreat. And suddenly weird stuff starts happening. So if one of the weird things is she's pregnant and doesn't know why, and that becomes part of it, to me, that just adds to the whole horror.
Sure, yeah.
That could very well be it. It's just not something I've seen in the material yet.
I'm titillated, you could say. I don't know. I haven't seen her in anything, so I don't know if she's a good actress. Why I'm hesitant is because she's not one of those sort of quote unquote working actor horror movie actresses. No. So that makes me a little bit nervous, I guess.
Yeah.
Which is so weird and normally backwards. But for this genre, typically the movies go better if it's someone who works specifically in that genre, yes. or the genre yes. actor, or someone you've never heard of. So I don't know. I'm on the fence.
To me, this is the moment. If she knocks this out of the park, like the movie, horror movies, they can be hit and miss. Maybe this movie won't be beloved by everyone, but if she gives a good acting performance in this, then that to me puts her in the category of an actor. So that's one of the things I'm actually kind of interested in, because so far everything I've seen her in, like, more, I don't know her personally, but more or less would fit the idea of who she is. Like, it's not like a far stretch to believe. This is the first movie where I go, okay, if you have acting chops, you'll pull this off.
She kind of seems like she's being marketed as a bombshell. Is that, am I reading that correctly? Like, the things I've seen are the kind of the promotion material and the red carpets, kind of like a little bombshell. You know, she's really beautiful, which, again, this is not a bad thing, but is that what you mean by,
are you using the right term, bombshell?
Bombshell?
Isn't that a horrible, horrible thing? Like, isn't a bombshell when it's like something unexpected happened?
Marilyn Monroe was a bombshell.
I have never heard that term used to describe a human being. No, every time I've heard the term bombshell, it's like, oh, this unexpected thing happened and it was like a bombshell into the production, or it was...
The term bombshell is a forerunner to the term sex symbol, used to describe popular women regarded as very attractive. So is that not how she's being promoted by the studios?
It's a hard question to answer. Is that how she's being promoted?
That's kind of how I, even like at she.
That's a good question.
Because when you, I just asked because from what I've seen, she definitely is leaning into kind of like the sexier side of things. No shame whatsoever, but that's, you know, I think she was in a music video and she had that comment being like, I felt so sexy. I don't think I'm being sexualized, but it made so it was a little bit controversial because of the way she was dressed. And then even at the Vanity Fair Oscar party, she wore a dress that Angelina Jolie wore to the Oscars about 20 years ago and had her hair like Marilyn Monroe.
Right.
So,
right.
And you had said, oh, what I've seen her in, she is essentially, the way I interpreted your comment was, she's essentially playing to type. And yeah, I thought, okay, is the type bombshell? Like, is it kind of sex symbol?
Like Euphoria, her role in Euphoria, and even her role, I haven't seen the movie yet, but even the role in that romantic comedy seems like an older version of the girl from Euphoria, even though the girl from Euphoria is kind of crazy in a little bit. But like, to me, yeah, those are less of a stretch, whereas an acting performance like this is different. Like, it's a completely different sort of turn from what maybe she's used to, because so far she's done a romantic comedy, a teen romance drama, essentially, like TV show, and then Madam Web, which in Madam Web, she definitely, in terms of that role, would go against this whole new bombshell, or I guess it's an old term, theory, because her character in Madam Web was like this sort of quiet, geeky,
right,
more subdued, and this role in Immaculate I would also offer as, well, that's now going counter.
Oh yeah, she's literally playing a nun,
a romantic comedy coming from a teen drama, absolutely, like that, like,
sure,
100% that fits into that persona, but these roles she's picking now, they don't, like, that goes counter that type. So that's interesting. Like, even if she is playing into that in, like, her public persona, she sure seems to be starting to pick roles that are a little bit not that.
I will say this is literally just me looking at, like, stills on the runway, like, on the red carpet and stuff. Like, I haven't heard her speak. But in terms of the magazine spread she's done, it is what I would interpret as kind of the classic bombshell stereotypes.
Right.
So that's why I was interested to know, like, is that the type she's playing? But your that explanation of kind of like the trajectory, right? Like from teen show to rom com. Yep, makes sense. Yep.
Superhero movie, even so, regardless of the, still, it's like check, check, check. Now it's like deep character driven horror film. Like, that's a little bit different. Like, she's not playing the blonde who's scared and running away in the horror movie. She's not playing
the final girl.
No, she's playing like the lead who's going to be tortured by, who's going to have to defeat.
I guess she is, then technically she is the final girl. If we're talking girls. But
she's playing a nun. You know what I mean? Like, that's
very,
to me, that's
very opposite from what her other roles. I will mention, I saw this week a couple headlines. People are still talking Madam Web, and she's gone on record saying that, you know, everything she's done, she has picked strategically for her career. Mm-hmm. So she said, I picked Madam Web, and now I have relationships at Sony, which led to the Immaculate and the rom-com she did. Mm-hmm. So kudos to her. You know, she's cultivating an image and she's cultivating a career, and whether or not that's genuine, you know what I mean? Like, whether or not that's just her saying, essentially it's her saying, I did a job and I did that job for a reason. Kudos to her.
I don't think you have to explain why you would take a superhero movie. And also she may or may not have thought she was doing a Marvel movie, which.
Yeah, fair enough.
Also.
Sounds like she might have been bamboozled. Like,
but again, like, that wouldn't, if you were like, oh, you were just in, you know, you were essentially went from being a teen star to in this romantic comedy. Now, why don't you do this you know, this movie with Marvel, like in her mind, if she was thinking it was part of the Marvel Cinematic Universe, of course you're going to say yes. Like, why wouldn't you?
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, it makes sense. And it's interesting. I just never thought of it in the way you were talking about, like the studios marketing people. I know that happens. Like, I'm in marketing. I know what you're kind of talking about. But to me, I don't know. I feel like with her, it's like you don't really have to do any work there. Like, she's going to control her own image and where she goes.
Yeah, like she's
popular enough to do that. You know,
we live in an age where like artists are allowed to like pick what clothes they wear. Like, so when I guess when I said like, oh, the studios are promoting in a certain way, I guess that's like an old way of thinking.
Oh yeah, like 20-30 years ago, 100%. Now
she's just a young, like 20 something who is dressing like hiply or whatever. Mm-hmm. I guess some of the discourse I've also seen online is that like people think like she's really you know, she's really beautiful. And so again, I thought maybe that's like that was the trope you were alluding to. I will say,
yeah,
she is,
I think
beautiful.
That was part of it. I think that definitely that's part of it. I guess what I was meaning was that trajectory of
right. Yeah.
You're gonna
totally
go from teen star to romantic comedy to totally superhero movie, more so in that, and this is a bit of a turn. But yeah, I mean that works as well. You know who's on, you know, to switch it, on the male side, it is something that happened to, I can't believe I just blanked on his name. That was going to be such a good transition. The guy who just had to have his face reconstructed.
Zac Efron.
Thank you. So Zac Efron, who went from like High School Musical to Hairspray to some sort of romantic comedy thing, turned down the remake of Footloose, and then like really started to take turns into comedy, and then really went into like more drama and darker stuff. Like he kind of went that route.
And Mike, that's a great comparison because he is also, and I guess it's too soon to say what Sydney Sweeney's like sex symbol. If she's going to be like an iconic, you know what I mean? It's probably too early in her career to see if she's going to be like the likes of Marilyn Monroe, Angelina Jolie, like these kind of legendary leading women who are also really known for their beauty and sex appeal. But your comparison is so apt because Zac Efron was like the it guy for teen girls, right? Mm-hmm. Like heartthrob. And again, in some ways was playing against type later on. Mm-hmm. And I shouldn't say later on, like now. I think he's currently in his acting season. Yeah, so I don't know a lot about Sydney Sweeney. I'll say she's everywhere on the internet. They seem to be trying to make her an it girl. I don't know. So truth and
tell. Yeah, you can't go on the internet without seeing her these
days. She's everywhere.
It's everywhere. Yeah, definitely. But yeah, definitely, I guess, yeah, sometimes you get a movie where you're kind of like interested for multiple reasons. And one of that is here you've got this young actor who's kind of pursuing roles, but going about it differently. Like, unlike, for example, Zendaya, who's kind of always done these sorts of, like, she's in Dune and she's in all these different things. And she's got like a couple films under her belt that, and TV shows as well, that where she's playing like darker roles and playing more acting roles. Like, it's almost, like, here you've got two young actors on, like, and taking it in a very different path. And this is the first sort of curve we saw out of Sydney Sweeney. So I'm just kind of interested to see, like, if she does well in this, it's going to mean one. To me, it means one.
She'll be less of a genre it girl and more of a, like, an actress.
Oh, like,
actor.
You're going after the craft. Like, you're trying
got
to
get it. Got it. Interestingly, Zendaya has a movie about tennis coming out and a weird love triangle.
and she like it looks like she's like manipulating them in some way. Yeah. It really looks really interesting,
like a thriller almost. It looks weird,
but again, like out of her because of the variety of work she's done.
Yeah, it makes
that
sense.
Kind of like, oh, that makes sense. Like she's kind of, to me at least, still at a young age, established herself in this kind of like really acting role. And it's interesting because you see a lot of like young actors and we're tracking their careers. Like you see someone like, we talked about Millie Bobby Brown like months ago and how after Stranger Things, she's kind of getting trapped in these, like she just did those two movies where she was
Sherlock Holmes, Enola.
Yeah, Enola Holmes. And like, they were fun family films, but they just released this movie on Netflix, Damsel, that she's in. That also, she seems to be like stuck in this sort of fantasy kind of
boss girl.
Yeah.
She's a boss girl, but it's in like in genre movies.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Which seems to be where she's sitting right now.
I wonder if it's a case of, and I think you have one more trailer for Taylor.
I do.
But one last thing about Billy Bobby Brown. I wonder if she, and we've speculated about this before, I've never seen any reporting about this or any numbers, but I would not be surprised if she's signed a so many picture deal, like, you know, like five movies with Netflix. And that's why, and we all, you know, we've talked about it a lot. Netflix original movies are kind of hit or miss.
They
feel a little bit direct to video sometimes. And so I wonder if that's part of that typecasting, is that she's kind of settled into a groove with Netflix. And who knows? And this is complete speculation, because like I said, I have not seen any reporting on this. But Netflix does seem to have a stable of actors.
They do. Yeah. And I think
they must be signing contracts with actors.
Yes. And it's probably, and it's worked, certainly so far, everything that they've done with her at least is working. Because after Stranger Things, it's like both Enola Holmes movies were pretty good hits. They're like really good for family. You can watch it with your family. Now here comes a fantasy film, Damsel, and everything I've heard about it is, oh, it's like kind of like growing up with your audience if you were a Millie Bobby Brown fan. Like, you probably liked her in Stranger Things. Great family film for Enola Holmes, but now it's like, okay, now this is the next step. You know, your teens are going to enjoy this film, and it's a little more fantasy based. And it's interesting that Netflix is doing that, where they're, you know, taking someone and probably, like you're saying, signing this contract, and it's like, okay, now let's do these films and then these films, and kind of age with the audience in that way. So yeah, it is interesting. Like, her career track seems to be more specific to that genre. So it'll be interesting to see what happens there. Yeah. One more film that I'm looking forward to that comes out, I believe we get it in Canada just after Easter or around Easter. This is a film that is completely against the type of movie that I normally watch. It's called Arthur the King.
I've not heard of this one.
Okay, so this is about an adventure racing world championship team that are doing like adventure racing. So it's almost like obstacle coursey, like triathlon things.
Right.
That's led by Mark Wahlberg, and the team is like in trouble. They're not doing great, and they somehow meet up with this dog, who somehow like inspires them. And a friendship forms between Mark Wahlberg and this dog. And again, not the type of like racing movies and dog movies, not the type of movie I'm normally interested in. But I saw the trailer, and I was like, that looks kind of good.
Looks
like
a little
the trailer
riveting.
kind of sold me on it a little bit more. Yeah, it looks like it's kind of about this dog's life and how this dog connects to this racing thing. I think it's based on a true story.
Yeah.
Yeah, like Mark Wahlberg films have been really missed for me recently. Like, he seems to be in a very specific area. But again, another relatively good actor. It looks really interesting. The early reviews and the early things I've seen about it are very positive. Like, I think it just opened in the States, or at least just went through the review circuit. So I think it opened in the States now, but we get it like in and around Easter, that type of thing. So yeah, that's kind of the third movie in this March, early April, that I'm kind of looking at being like, okay, these three movies kind of interest me, of something that I would want to go see and check out.
I hope the dog is a real dog and not a CGI dog, because I hate this trend of CGI, of having like quote unquote dog movies, and the human is a real actor and the dog is CGI, and it's so obvious. I understand, you know, dog rights, animal rights. Maybe we want to move away from using live animals in movies, but
mainly the issue. Yeah,
I don't. They look corny as all heck. CGI dogs. I don't know.
Yeah, like I think that is unfortunately the sort of, well, I guess, or fortunately, depending on how you think about it, the sort of issue is they want to be really careful, as they should be, with animals and what they have them do. So the best way is CGI. Now, what I saw from the trailer, at least, I don't know if it is CGI. It didn't look CGI.
Right.
But again, you know, I guess you never know at the end of the day. It could be. But yeah, those are the three films. What are your thoughts overall about what will probably be my viewing for the next couple of weeks.
I think Imaginary out of the three is probably... Here's the thing. On paper, Immaculate is probably the most Taylor movie. Yeah. But I'm so... The fact that they're trying to get like an it girl to star in it is just weird to me and makes me like a little bit nervous.
Right.
And the dog movie, not my genre whatsoever. So out of the three, I would probably most be inclined to Imaginary. So I'm looking forward to that review. I mean, I'm looking forward to all of the reviews. But of the three, that one sounds most interesting.
Yeah. And I mean, again, with Immaculate, I think I can understand the hesitation. And to me, it's a wait and see.
Yeah, right? You never like, know.
Once you go, you just never know. People can surprise you. And yeah, I think that'll be really interesting. So yeah, that'll be what I think and hopefully I find and watch. Then there's other movies I'm going to watch that I'm not as interested in, but I'm going to watch them just because I'm curious. Like that weird Ghostbusters movie we're getting. Oh. I don't know why we're getting like another one. Like I'm so confused.
People really liked the one with Paul Rudd. I never watched it. Okay. I think it's on Netflix right now.
It was okay.
Is he in the second one?
Yeah.
With the guy from Stranger Things, the
Finn Wolfhard.
Yeah. Finn Wolf, yeah, Wolf. Wolf, yeah. So yeah. I'm not weighing in. I'm not invested in that franchise, and I'm pretty sure of all the franchise movies, I've only ever seen the reboot with the all female cast, which people absolutely hate, and I thought was fine.
you thought that movie was fine?
I'm pretty sure I enjoyed it. Like I
thought it was dreadful.
But I have nothing to compare it to. I never saw the original.
Yeah. Yeah. That's understandable. But even I don't know, even as a movie I thought it was really bad. But I guess in truth I would describe, if it wasn't for the Ghostbusters name, I would describe that Ghostbusters movie as
like an airplane it.
Yeah, just an airplane. It like just kind of like a silly movie that had some funny moments, but wasn't as funny as I thought it was. But when you add the Ghostbusters title on it, yeah, that
the dangers of reboots.
Yeah, I mean that's the issue. So yeah, I'm gonna see that too. Otherwise, a lot of the movies I was looking forward to have been pushed back to kind of mid-summer, even into May.
Batman had a crazy pushback.
Which one?
Batman, the next Robert Pattinson Batman. I think it's
isn't
like
it not coming out until next year? It was pushed a year because of the strike and everything. Yeah, brutal. Even Deadpool 3 or Deadpool and Wolverine, as its new title, was supposed to be May, and I think it is still this year, but I'm pretty sure it's like November now. Like it pushed back like 4 or 5 months, which is wild.
Speaking of trailers, before we move on, because you did tell me pre-recording that we have two fan questions, which has restored my faith in humanity and faith in our fans. I kid. But one last trailer talk, and I would be remiss to not bring this up. I watched the trailer. I don't know how. It must have come up on Instagram or something. I watched the trailer for the new Crow reboot. And...
with Skarsgård? Young Skarsgård?
Yeah. Yeah. Have you seen this train wreck?
The trailer? No. I've heard about it, but I have not watched it.
One, I think it was a comment I saw, or one headline I saw, was that they've jokeified the Crow. So if anyone remembers Jared Leto's Joker with the face tattoos.
Oh, like Joker. Okay.
Yeah, they jokeified him. So he has face tattoos and... the character design looks horrible in my opinion. They've definitely, apparently the biggest change to the story is that they've added much more, like the emphasis is much more on the romance prior to the murders. So essentially like why he goes on the rampage. It looks really corny. It looks like maybe, again, it's the case of you're rebooting such a beloved piece of IP that like you're really going to polarize audiences by going so bold in one direction. I get it. They're trying to reboot, make it different, make it modern for this generation, yada, 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 whatever. We got to make it different. But I feel like they've gone so far in one direction with the character design and the action sequences that it's like, you kind of missed. To be fair, I'm attracted to this, attached to this IP only because of the Brandon Lee movie. I've never seen the direct to video sequels and I have not read the graphic novels. So I'm really attached to it based on like one single standalone film. And that's why my conception of the character is like so firmly rooted in the original movie. But based on that trailer, I'm just absolutely horrified. And I just think it's just so bold. I did read one thing from the director. He said that the character design is based on like what like the punks looked like when he grew up. I want to say like in the 90s. Like the character design is based on people he sort of knew growing up and also influenced by these sort of current musicians who I am not familiar with because I don't listen to hip music. But there's like these young, you know, these young musicians who have like a lot of face tattoos, Mike? You probably don't know because you don't listen to music.
Yeah, I have no idea what you're talking about.
Okay. The Mike trailer for Mike is not going well right now.
No.
But, so essentially the director's like, I based him on the kids I grew up with and like current musicians. And I want those like those rebellious teens to see themselves in this character. And I'm like, okay, well, that doesn't work for me because I am not a rebellious teen. I am an old woman who's attracted to the original 1994 movie. And I don't want you to put your greasy punk myths all over it. But watch the trailer, Mike. Let me know your thoughts.
I will check out this trailer. It doesn't sound very appealing. But yeah, certainly if they, now I get that Joker fight. If they're doing that,
I'm
not a fan. Yeah,
I'm not a fan. Flip back hair.
I really think that really didn't work at all for the Joker, and it sounds even more random for this movie. Like, I don't even know why they made that choice. But yeah, I will check out that trailer.
I guess because in the original story, he's a musician and like an alternative like rock musician. So like, how are we going to make an alternative musician in 2024? I know, give him face tattoos. Maybe, I don't know. I'm just not hip. I'm not dialed into what's cool. But I think when you always run the risk of making yourself irrelevant by trying to make something cool. You know
yes,
what I mean?
I agree with that. If you go in with that intention, oh, I just want to make something cool and hip, you're not going to. It's a natural thing. Tell the story the way you want to tell it.
And that's what happened with the Joker in Suicide Squad. I think they tried to lean too heavily in making him look modern and cool, and he just came across as really corny. So I don't know. Also, it doesn't help that Jared Leto dialed up his performance to like 500 and was also a horrible person offset. So I don't get the same sense of Bill Skarsgård is gonna do that. But yeah, ooh, I wish they could go in and CGI those tattoos off of him. But too late.
Yeah. It's so fascinating that directors who wanna like, let's say you're gonna reboot something or what have you. That I know studios put pressure on things like it's an IP we can sell. But as a director, why wouldn't you come into it being like, well, I'm going to tell the best Crow story I possibly can, as opposed to focusing on making it cool and hip and new and like this kind of different, for lack of a better word, like approach to it or whatever they're called, like whatever their vision is for it. I just find this such an interesting conversation that I would love to have with directors and creatives of like, isn't there enough evidence to show that a movie does really well if there's passion behind it and the vision behind it, even if it is a recognizable IP? Like the best superhero movies were the ones with like a lot of thought and care and heart and work put in behind the scenes to sort of build the best story possible. And the ones like just kind of thrown together because we have to, people seem to notice quicker.
Mike,
like I think movie audiences are smart enough.
Who's to say this director isn't throwing a ton of love and devotion and creative vision, and it just isn't right? Like, that happens too. Like, he's saying, like, okay, I'm modeling the character. I'm modeling the character after the type of guys I grew up with. So, like, clearly, like, okay, there's love there. But it's like, right, ooh, right. Like, read the room. Like, is that the right approach for this movie? The other thing that has come up a lot with Crow fans is that because it's based on a graphic novel or a comic book series, and forgive my lingo because I don't know a lot about the differences, but it's kind of episodic. The Crow, different people become the Crow in each edition of the graphic novel or the comic. Right. So fans have said, don't touch the Brandon Lee version. That is only one story in the Crow universe, so to speak. Pick a different character and go from there. And it seems like they did not take the fan advice, and they've gone and they're rebooting the first Crow movie and just making like dramatic changes to the story, but it's still like the major brushstrokes. Again, right. If you're going to do that many changes, pick a different story in the canon.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Like, that's just, that would be an option that you would have, especially if you have like an IP, like a comic book or graphic novels or anything that has that rich, long history to it. I feel like there's enough you can pull from that if you have this vision, if you want to do different things, you can go to different parts of the story to make it work. Like, that's available to you. So that's really interesting. Like that, and this is an interesting conversation that we need to keep having, I think, with these kinds of movies. Because to me, it sounds like The Crow, recognizable IP, thing that someone loves, has already been set up to be very, like, controversial, which sometimes sells tickets. But it sounds to me like this movie's going to bomb.
I think it's going to turn off diehard fans, and maybe it will be appealing to new audiences. But I can't remember what movie. Oh, when we were talking about Mean Girls. Like, what is it really worth attracting a new audience while alienating the old audience? You know what I mean? When, like, you could have got both.
You could have got both. Yeah. And it's interesting because, as we've talked about before, whenever something bombs or fails, it seems like producers, or at least the company behind it or the distribution, they
point the audience's fault. They didn't get it.
Yeah, it's the audience's fault. They didn't get it. They didn't understand it. Or they, like, think it's the other thing. It's like, oh, well, you know, comic book movies are dead.
Yeah.
It's comic book fatigue. Like, they'll blame something that's clearly not the case. It's just your movie was bad from the beginning. You heard it from the beginning by going in a different direction, or not, like, either being clear, or if you're going to go very different, you could ease an audience into it with a more relaxed trailer that shows them a little bit more what they're expecting, at least get them in the room. And then if your concept's strong enough, it'll win them over in the movie. So there's just odd. It's odd to me that they may make choices like that. Yeah. As you mentioned, Taylor, we do have two fan questions we want to quickly get to before we review our films today. So let's get to them.
Sure.
First one comes from Bryce, who says, hi, Screening in Kingston. Quick question for you about Dune. I've heard Dune described to me as this generation's Lord of the Rings. I haven't tried Dune yet, but I've heard a lot of buzz around it. I will admit that a few friends of mine have gone and really enjoyed it. I haven't exactly figured out if this is the type of movie for me or not, but I was also looking for something to watch with my family when I go visit them over the holidays. I'm wondering what you think in terms of, is Dune closer to Lord of the Rings that can be enjoyed by all members of the family, even though it's more fantasy-based, but has that big, quote-unquote, popcorn movie style to it, or is Dune a little bit too heavy to watch with parents?
You'll have to take this one away, Mike. I have not seen any of the Dunes. I haven't seen the original Dune. I haven't seen the I think there was a reboot or a made-for-TV version of Dune, and I have not seen the new ones. So you can take it away.
The two new Dune movies are definitely easier to understand than the one in the 80s, which was done by David Lynch.
Yeah.
So in that sense, in the way Bryce is saying this question, yes, especially the first Dune movie, they do a good job of setting things up and exactly explaining who everyone is and what they're doing. With that being said, had I not watched the first Dune movie again to remind me before watching the second, I might have gotten lost. Because the second really expands on things and takes things up to the next level and was a little bit more convoluted and all over the place. Would I describe it as this generation's Lord of the Rings? I don't know if I'd go that.
Don't you think it's more Star Wars because it's like in space?
It's not really in space. It's on a different planet, but there's very little scenes in space.
Right. It's like grounded in the planet. Like
100%. Yeah.
Yeah. Got it. Got
and like
it.
I could see
exploration.
Yeah, I could see it's both a space opera and a fantasy film, so it's kind of got touches of both. I think Lord of the Rings is a little bit more so a universal movie. And I think Dune, it depends on your parents. It really does. Like, it depends on what kinds of movies they're into and what they like. I think the first Dune movie is quite easy to watch for everyone without knowing the lore. I think the second one does a pretty good job of explaining things, but also goes off in different directions. And I would really recommend watching the first Dune movie close to watching the second to really get, if you have like over 6 hours to spare, to kind of get you back into it and get you figuring out what's going on. So yeah, I think it could work. I don't think it's quite Lord of the Rings though. I would say it's not quite that universal. I think it's a little bit more, it would be closer to the books of Lord of the Rings, actually, the movie, where the movies are a little bit more into getting deep into this kind of, really this like religion that's built and like all the different things around these cultures. Like it can get pretty dense. So that's kind of my answer to that question. Next question here comes from Cynthia, who says, ooh, some screening in Kingston tension. Looks like Mike and Taylor may start a movie debate any minute now.
I wonder about what?
I don't know. This is my first time reading this. When were we arguing about anything? I have no idea what this is. I have no idea what this is about.
Okay, does it go on?
No, that's the entire email. No, that's it. That came through our website.
Oh, that's great. Well, I don't remember. No hard feelings. That we're moving forward. As we said at the top of the episode, the Oscars are done. It feels like a new season. So whatever tension there may have been, although it kind of sounded like she wanted us to dish. It kind of sounded like she wanted us to have our debate.
I can't name one thing we disagreed about at the Oscars.
Or in recent weeks.
Or in recent weeks. I can't think of one thing. I have no idea what this is about. Now, in terms of the idea of sort of that movie debate idea and discussion, like, that is something I do enjoy.
You've been dreaming about us having a debate episode since the start of the show.
Yeah, because I'm competitive and I would get into it, and it might be like, it might come off as tension, but I don't know. I don't take things seriously enough to let it affect me. Like, if I ever had tension on the show, I was disagreeing, or like the times, Taylor, you bring up Star Trek and I have to like argue with you about that. I literally just go on with my life. Like, I don't think about it. Like, there's also like a theater or a theatricality to this show where part of, to me, what makes it fun is when you actually care about something, well, throw your passion into it. So, you know, that when it comes to like a debate, yeah, I would love to have the idea. People feel like, oh, this got tense because they really disagreed. Well, to me, then we're both doing a good job of presenting our points. But yeah,
we're just providing high quality content. But I wish I knew what she was alluding to.
Me too. Please,
I really can't remember.
Please reach out and tell us, because we don't know what she's talking about.
And we may very well have a movie debate.
And maybe we'll. Maybe if you can tell us, maybe that's a topic that worth debating. Whatever we're on different sides of.
Maybe it's going to be Ghostbusters female reboot. I don't even remember.
Yeah, exactly. I also don't think you loved it enough to like debate it. Like, I don't think you hated it.
I think it was an airplane for me.
You know, exactly. Like, I don't think airplane, that's enough. You have to see it and I have to skip it for that to be a debate, or vice versa.
True.
Like, that's the only way it works. Airplane it is not like, that's an airplane versus skip it. That's not a debate. That's too close. Okay. We got some movies we got to review. Review starts at 44 minutes.
Yeah, just like the last 44 minutes, the review starts.
Taylor, do you want to start things off with a trip down the career of Lindsay Lohan, who's back?
She's back. She's speaking of It Girl, she was an It Girl, then she kind of fell away, and then she is back. So I thought, because Mike has warned me, I've been a little bit off the rails the last couple weeks, and I kind of went off the rails again with Sydney Sweeney, although I tried to rein in my comments as much as possible. Mike, you can let me know if I was a little controversial about her. But
Honestly, I don't know. This is one of the things with you recently, and it's only been like maybe a couple of months. Like whenever you sort of came back officially, I never know. Like, I don't know if what we talked about should just all be on the episode or if it's going to cause problems. I have no idea. It's fascinating to see the trajectory of this show.
This is like literally story of my life. I'm like, is this brain bleed or is this having a baby? I don't know. I'm just crazy now.
Yeah, like, I don't know. I don't know which one it is either. But it's I will say, and I don't think it's a reach to say this. I think other people would agree. The show is different, definitely, in the past couple of months. So
maybe that's why our fans aren't running it anymore. We've lost them. I will try to be old Taylor, but there's no going back.
I don't think we've lost people. I just think everyone would accept. Like, I've never remembered in 4 years or 5 years or six, I don't know, 6 years? I don't know how long we've been doing this. I don't think we've ever talked about a sex symbol on this show, and now we like just keep talking about it. Like, every episode we are like discussing physical appearance, which is just something we never did. And I don't, like, it's just, it's so
to be
fascinating
better.
To me. No,
to
it's
better.
Not, I don't think it's a criticism. I'm not saying it's a criticism. I'm not saying it's good. I'm saying it's bad. It's just different.
In the case of Sydney Sweeney, I think it was relevant because it's something I've observed, and I was wondering if you observed it too. So anyways, I digress.
Yes.
So let's get to Irish Wish. Not controversial, not off the rails. One of the movies I reviewed right as I was coming back two Christmases ago was Lindsay Lohan's Christmas movie. And I'll be honest, I don't remember the name of it. And I saw that I gave it a relatively good review. And then I watched Irish Wish because it was Irish Wish. That's a hard one to say. It's her new comedy romance on Netflix. Very much of that Hallmark vein of movies, which we've talked about before, Mike, which you're not very schooled in this genre of movies, but it's very much like cookie cutter romance. It stars Lindsay Lohan as the romantic lead. And then there's Alexander Valhos is one of the romantic leads. And then the real romantic lead is Ed Spielers, and for the right life of me, I said, that man looks so familiar. I cannot remember where he's from. He was on You, the last season of You, Y-O-U, because I know that often causes confusion when we talk about the show You, Y-O-U.
And I think he played Captain Picard's son.
Okay.
If it's who I'm thinking. I'm pretty sure that guy's in this movie, too.
This movie doesn't really warrant a review because it was a bit of a mess. Not nearly as good as the Christmas movie. Mm. It was cute. Essentially, Lindsay Lohan falls in love with a guy. The day she's going to tell him that she's in love with him, he ends up meeting one of her best friends, falls in love with her instead. A year later, they're in Ireland. Lindsay Lohan is going to be the bridesmaid in the wedding to the man she loves, to the best friend.
Of course.
Does that make sense? Of course.
Yep.
And then she makes a wish. I wish that I was marrying him. The wish comes true. And then, of course, in the context of the movie, she finds out maybe this guy isn't right for her, right? This could not be more cookie cutter romance. It also had a very strange supporting cast where Ed and Lindsay played it kind of like a very straight romantic comedy, like as if like a bit, like I would say big budget romantic comedy, and then the rest of the cast acted like this was a Hallmark direct to TV movie, which was just very confusing. They didn't get the memo, so I guess that was a problem of directing. But like, it's not like they're gonna tell the good leads to, oh, can you act a little bit more crummy to match the rest of the cast? You know, the rest of the cast has to meet the Lindsay Lohan and the other guy, right? So I thought, okay, I'm being really tough on it only because the Christmas one was a pleasant surprise.
Yeah, you really enjoyed that movie.
I really enjoyed it. I thought it was a lot of fun. This movie was fine. It's an airplane. I think for people who like Lindsay Lohan, like I felt with the Christmas one, Lindsay Lohan is in fine form. It when you see her act, you're like, this is why she was an it girl in the aughts. You know what I mean? Like this is Mean Girl Lindsay. And so I'm happy for her and I want her to continue to act. And she clearly has good comedic timing. And I think she's a really good sport to be in these Netflix movies that feel a little bit like B movies. So anyways, for all the Lindsay Lohan girlies, I think there's enough in this movie that you're going to enjoy it. And that's why I say airplane it. You know, you don't need to run out to watch this, but if you're having a girls' night or you're with your
like
mom,
enough. There's enough.
It's
to
enough
like
there.
Enjoy.
There's enough there.
Yeah.
But for people who don't know a lot about Lindsay Lohan, are not into these Hallmark movies, this is a skip it. But I think, it was corny. The acting was a little bit weird. One review I saw was, this is what you get when you get AI to write your scripts. <Uh-oh>. So yikes. That's all I'm gonna say about that. It's an airplane if you're a Lindsay girly, and otherwise you're probably gonna want to skip.
It's interesting that you talk about the AI writing it, because the movie I'm gonna quickly review, American Fiction, is sort of the polar opposite quality of writing. Because not only because it won the Oscar, but from now watching American Fiction, I totally get why. It's a brilliant written script. I mean, the entire premise is so fascinating to me, but this movie is a lot more than I thought it was. Like, I thought this movie was going to be kind of this comedy with like drama around it, where it's about this writer who is Black, who is being kind of pressured to write more quote unquote like Black stories. Like, he's being shoehorned because of the color of his skin. And he wants, like, he believes his stories are just stories. They're not part of like the Black experience. And like, it takes it in a comedy angle. So there's this really funny scene where he goes to a bookstore, and I guess he goes there all the time because the people recognize him, and he keeps moving his books from the sort of Black experience category to like the different fiction categories. And he like really gets mad and yells at the people who work at this bookstore. And there's things like that that's played for comedy. But this movie has a lot of like deep heart to it. Like, it's really a story about him, his family, and kind of this debate or discussion around like what is race and culture, and where does that come from, and how much does it impact you, and how important actually is it? And you see, it's a lot less what I thought it was going to be, which is just, oh, he starts playing up that sort of one side of him to get more popular, and it's kind of this comedy with a message. That's there, but it's a lot more like family driven, which I wasn't expecting. Cool. Like, something happens near the beginning. I won't like spoil it, but it does happen at the beginning. But like, something basically happens that's impactful in his family at the beginning of the film, and that kind of really is the catalyst. And not only is, you know, Jeffrey Wright really good, but Sterling K. Brown is also like really good in it. And their dynamic is really interesting, of kind of how family relates to each other at a certain point in life, which is really interesting. Like, as everyone's older and more like, you know, established in their lives, and they all have lives of their own, but they're all still kind of connected because they're family. It is like really interesting. And I found the movie was a lot more about that than I was expecting it to be, which kind of surprised me. But it's a really, really fascinating movie. Like, if you're looking for just a movie that's just like, honestly, a well-written small movie that's really focused on the life of this author who's really trying to make it in the writing world, but also dealing with family dynamics, you're going to really love this movie. It's enjoyable. It's smart. It's funny when it needs to be. It's dramatic when it needs to be. There's some really, really great performances in it. It's like a movie that is just, like, we talk about these types of movies, Taylor, where it's like, it's just good. It's just a good movie. Is it a perfect movie? No. But to me, it's a see it. And it's just a really nice time. Like, it's a really nice movie night movie. You're going to really think about a lot of different things in it. There's some really interesting scenes that are interesting to think about. Like, I think they were in the trailer. But this idea of, like, you've got these very like unaware white authors or producers or publishers who are like who really want to be more diverse and they want to like diversify, but they go like the wrong way with it. They almost like go too far into the area of like, it's got to be about the black experience.
They want it to be like stereotypical, right?
Exactly. They want it to be more stereotypical. And Issa Rae, I think is her name. She's in Barbie. She plays an author that like writes this ridiculous book that is the most stereotypical thing ever. And people just like love it. They give her a standing ovation. Like there's movie rights being sold. And it is, Taylor, it's such trash. Like she does like a reading from it, but because it plays in that stereotype and like sort of Jeffrey Wright's character's reaction to all this is what makes it so funny that he just can't believe. They do kind of touch upon it. I was saying they weren't, but there's one like very Star Trekian moment in this movie, which I think is why I ended up enjoying it so much. Is one of the things Star Trek does really well. You can forgive me, Taylor, as I go off this rant for a second, is they pose an interesting sort of philosophical or societal question without necessarily proposing like a response to it, but just as this is the way a character feels about it, or this is the thing, and the movie or the show or the episode like dives into it, but doesn't really leave you with an answer. And this movie does it in a really interesting way where his character at the beginning says, I don't believe in race. Like this is coming from Jeffrey Wright's character. And I felt like they kind of touched upon that a little bit. Like there's a little bit of discussion with his family. There's a little bit of debate and discussion, but I feel like they could have leaned into that more. And I was more interested in that premise. Like, okay, what do you mean? And what does that mean to you? And what does race mean to other people? And like, why is it important? Like he does with his family, there is this like connection to culture and race and what it means. And that is part of it. Don't get me wrong. But there's a part of me that's like, you really could have gone into that deeper, which is one of the things that I always liked about Star Trek is where they pose these like one-liners that make you think. Mm-hmm. And this movie actually has more than one. Like it does a good job of making you think it multiple times. But I'm very fascinated to see this like filmmaker and this writer do more of these kind of thought-provoking think pieces, philosophical and societal questions, because it's really interesting to me. Like that was very fascinating and I would have liked to have heard more. But that's really it. Like that's my criticism. Like to me, this movie is a see it. I thought American Fiction was really good.
Was it nominated for Best Picture?
It was nominated for Best Picture.
Right, yeah.
It won for
writing. And you feel like it was rightfully nominated?
Maybe yeah, not rightfully nominated. And I think it won for writing, which made a lot of sense.
Right.
And I think Jeffrey Wright and Sterling K. Brown were both nominated, which also makes sense. Those were the standout performances. So it all fit for me. Like, I think it all made sense.
Yeah, there you go. So, yeah.
There you go. American Fiction. It's a see it for me. Check it out. But there you go. That's all the time we had. Two quick reviews. Hopefully you don't skip over the 35-minute conversation we had at the beginning. but thank you, everyone, for listening once again this week.
Go see some movies.